The world might be losing its sweet tooth, and that's bad news for anyone who grows or sells sugar. For the past decade, demand for the sweetener has grown at about 2% per year. But now growth could slow to about half that rate.
So on May 11th, the judge in San Francisco had issued a partial preliminary injunction which required someone to turn over some paperwork on exactly the plans leading into the self-driving tech at Uber. Either Uber had to turn it over or Lewandowski had to turn it over. And if nobody was going to do so, it required that Lewandowski's job be threatened. But the company apparently made the decision today that it was going to part ways.
Let's take a step back, though, with the relationship with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. In terms of what we saw at the G7, there clearly is a division in terms of the worldview between these global leaders. And this notion that they were going to be able to work together on trade, on things like auto manufacturing, seemingly was not healed during the tense G7 summit.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's May 31st, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you here for the last Opening Bell show of the month. It's the last day of the month, obviously, the last business day of the month, too. Lots to cover, though, before we hit June. Later in the program, we'll bring in one of the experts at NASA who's going to talk to us a little bit about this new astronaut class that's going to be announced next week. I wonder if anybody from Chicago or Illinois is in that group. We'll talk a little bit about the business of space a little later in the show. Coming up in a minute, we'll bring in Dr. Jose Torres, who's president of the Illinois Mathematics and Science Academy. But first, let's go to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing down. Looks like could be a weak open on Wall Street later this morning, but S&P and NASDAQ futures are pointing up. Looks like possibly a tepid start. Maybe that's a better word for the day when the opening bell rings later this morning. Crude oil is trading at $48.84 a barrel. That's up down almost 1.5% around the globe this morning. The FTSE is trading higher. The DAX is higher. Everything else is lower in Europe. And in Asia this morning, markets are generally lower. The Nikkei is off about 27 points. The Hang Seng off about 40 points. Markets generally coming back from a holiday in Asia, causing those mixed shares. Also worries lingering over political uncertainty in Washington. Shares dropping overnight here in the U.S. China being boosted by manufacturing data. As I mentioned, the Nikkei off just a little bit this morning. In afternoon trading fell almost 0.5%. Australia's index added nearly 0.2%. On Wall Street, the Standard & Poor's index lost about 3 points yesterday to 24,1291. The Dow Jones Industrials fell about 50 points, and the NASDAQ dipped about 7 points. Some stories that we're following. We mentioned the economic report in China. An official monthly survey shows that growth in China's factory activity was steady last month in a sign that recovery in the world's number two economy is holding up. The Purchasing Managers Index, the PMI there released this morning, came in at 51.2. For May, that was unchanged from the previous month. Mexico's government oil commission says the country's probable and possible oil and natural gas reserves dropped again in 2016, but the pace of decline appears to have slowed. Unproven but probable reserves, known as 2P, decreased 5.5% to 16.8 billion barrels. The Federal Reserve has fined Germany's largest bank $41 million for failure to maintain controls against money laundering at its U.S. operations. The U.S. regulators announced the penalty against Deutsche Bank yesterday, citing unsafe and unsound practices. Well, coming up at the Illinois Mathematics and Science Academy outside of Aurora is the Teen Innovation Awards. It happens every year there. These are teen innovators who come up with perhaps the next big idea. We thought we'd bring in Dr. Jose Torres, who's the president of the Math and Science Academy, this morning. Good morning, Dr. Torres. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's so good that you're here. I was telling you before we started the show this morning, I love part of what you do, science. I never was really good at math, which is why I'm a journalist. Tell us a little bit about what the Math and Science Academy does.
Well, great. Thank you so much. The Illinois Mathematics and Science Academy, actually we call it IMSA, has been around for 30 years, believe it or not. And they were doing STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, way before it became very popular. And frankly, we not only teach math and science, but we we also teach history and world languages and art and music, and because we need rounded citizens who develop scientific knowledge.
Give us a sense of who the kids are that are there. Are they junior high, high school age? Are they from part of one state or part of the upstate or downstate? Where are they from?
Right. So, Illinois Math and Science Academy, Illinois, mm-hmm. is the focus, is for residents of Illinois. So that's the requirement. Second, we serve students through a residential academy. So students actually live on campus. If you were to go on campus, it feels like a mini college. So we have 10th through 12th grade students. So students apply when they're in 9th grade. Actually, 10% of the class applies in 8th grade and they skip 9th grade. I mean, these are students who are getting an 800 on the SAT math and the SAT verbal in 8th grade. And so they get in, and so they'll skip a grade. And we have around 650 students who are part of every class, 50% female, 50% male, and they come from all over the state. This year, this three-year cohort, we have students representing 51 counties from the state of Illinois. And over the last 30 years, we've had all but maybe three counties represented. We've had people from 95, 98 counties.
And so I'm imagining this as being not only, you know, this educational atmosphere, but sort of an incubator. We talk a lot on this program about incubators for innovators who are, you know, adults and entrepreneurs. Is that what this is for kids?
Absolutely. I'll give you an example. We have had students who went on to, you've heard of a little thing called Netscape and Mosaic. Well, Robert and Michael McCool were students at IMSA and went to the U of I and developed that. OkCupid and SparkNotes, Sam Yagan, I'm sure you've had him around. He graduated and so did his brother. And so these students get involved with other very bright students. And so all of a sudden they're not the brightest anymore. Right. And so all of a sudden they begin to really work with each other, and because they're living with each other. And the other very unique program that we have, and unique part is that, you remember the FedEx, 20% of your time is dedicated to whatever you want to do? Well, we actually have, as it were, a FedEx day. On Wednesdays, we call it iDays, and it's for student inquiry research. And students are allowed to pursue an interest that they may have. We want them to get involved in scientific research, but they can get involved in historical research on campus, or they may go to different areas in the city, Northwestern, U of Chicago, Rush Hospital, Fermi Lab, Argonne, and so forth.
How is that important to fulfilling them as learners?
So it's critically important, because what happens at IMSA is that students are not learning math and science and research just from a book. They're actually doing it. Mm-hmm. And so it's inquiry-based. And so students are identifying problems. And right now we're really focused on how do we turn the tables and take really young, bright minds and expose them to the grand challenges of the world. And so we're really actually talking at the academy with students about how do we eliminate hunger? How do we eliminate the water crisis in the world? Mm-hmm. How do we create sustainable energy? And so students are actually beginning to think about what research they could do, who are the partners out there that they can get engaged in. And most recently, we had Steve Chen, who's co-founder of YouTube, was visiting with us. He's an alum and donated $1 million for us to create an innovation center, very similar to 1871. Mm-hmm. And if you were to go on campus, you'd find 6,400 square feet of space that looks like high-tech, Facebook, Google, whatever you might want to think about, with collaborative spaces, a tell lab stage, and focus, again, on collaboration, on innovation, on entrepreneurship.
In the business world, we've been seeing that a lot over the last couple of years, and they've been calling it moonshot, that we have to come up with another moonshot with all of the people putting all their minds together to solve these mm-hmm. big problems. How significant is it that young people are starting that process way ahead mm-hmm. of the curve?
Right. So, you know, our mission at IMSA is to ignite and nurture creative, ethical, scientific minds that advance the human condition. And I like to say that we're here to significantly influence life on our planet. What a moonshot, right? And so The way that we work with our students is that we help them think about the impossible being possible. And Leon Lederman, our Nobel Prize physicist who started IMSA, founder, used to tell students that because they have a beginner's mindset, they're not cluttered by expertise. And so they don't know what is impossible.
Yeah, let's expand a little bit about that, because I find that fascinating that, you know, in my mind and probably the other folks that work on the show, we have that in our heads now, where you can't do that, or that's impossible. To not have that there, it just seems like there would be so much more open.
So, you know, we talk a lot about fail fast and learn mm-hmm. fast. And mm-hmm. so that's a challenge for this population, because it's really, they're very advanced learners. They haven't had a lot of failure. And so when they come to IMSA, they actually experience failure, but they experience it as 10th graders, 11th graders, not as college students or as first professionals. Mm-hmm. So they do experience this focus. And then what we do is we've been working with students on innovation and entrepreneurship for a while, and we've been doing a power pitch competition for 7 or 8 years, where students develop a product, a minimal viable product, and they share the pitch, and they win awards. And so more recently, we're really trying to expand that throughout the state to call on innovators and entrepreneurs who are young. And we're going to be doing an awards program pretty soon for that.
The Teen Innovation Awards.
Right. So it's the IMSA Tel Labs Next Generation Teen Innovators Awards. And what we're looking is for students who are in 7th through ninth grade entering next year, who have been working on a particular startup project or a project that has a social impact. Again, our mission statement is advancing the human condition.
Give us a sense of what some of those have been in the past.
So at IMSA, we had a student last year or 2 years ago who won the pitch, and it was really to reduce bullying in schools. And mm-hmm. she was not a resident student, but it was an outreach effort. Mm-hmm. And she ended up going to Shark Tank and actually getting $100,000 investment in her company.
Yeah. And she was just a teenager.
And she's a teenager. Yeah. She didn't even come to IMSA. She was part of our outreach efforts. So we have we did Power Pitch just earlier this year, and we had three winners. I think the winner was a middle school student. And the winners were supposed to go to Indiana to compete on a major thing, but it was only for high school students. Huh. So this middle school student who won our Power Pitch town was not allowed to go to the real big competition. And when we went to the competition, the students, the IMSA won first, second, and third prize. And the kinds of project was a way to so that sometimes you have flammable stovetops, and people haven't figured out how to do that. And so it was a way to address that issue, and the students were developing sort of a prototype for that. There was another one that had a some kind of brace to help with arthritis that took the warmth of the skin and some technology to help create massage. And that student that I mentioned to you, the middle school student, he developed a smart exit sign. So if you think about auditoriums or big events, Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and there's an emergency, people will go look for the exit. Well, people gravitate towards the same exits. Yeah. And so his invention was to develop a smart sign so that if there were too many people on that side, it would direct them to a different evacuation point.
Very cool. Scientists say, mathematicians, they always look at the younger generation and say, one of these kids is going to be the person that lands on Mars, is going to be the person that solves hunger issues. Is that how the instructors at the academy look at the young people there, that one of these kids could be the superstar someday?
I certainly look at that that way. And I have a favorite quote from our founder, and he said that if we do what we know and feel is right, it is bound to happen that among our graduates, there will be scientists, engineers, and those who go on to earn degrees in laws and letters. There are likely to be those few who create new intellectual worlds, cure a dreaded human ailment, or significantly influence life on our planet.
Yeah, it's exciting to feel that way. It gives you optimism, doesn't it?
Oh, and then he goes on and says, and we should treat every individual as if any one of them could be this person. Mm-hmm. Only one such product will make the effort and expense of this institution worthwhile for his entire duration.
So what's keeping our state from having three or four or five of these academies all over?
That is a great question. So IMSA, you know, is a state agency. So mm-hmm. we are funded by the state. Should I say more?
No, that's okay. No, you've made your point. But so, I guess part of what your mission is to sort of spark that. If it's not the state doing it, maybe localities can do it. Yeah. Maybe local groups. Yeah.
So we have two legislative mandates. One is to serve these very bright, talented students with a passion in math and science. Our second legislative mandate, which we take as seriously, is to further successful education in math and science throughout the state. And we do that through teaching teachers, through our Fusion program, which is a program designed to be hands-on science activities which teach teachers how we teach, and then through summer programs and different outreach programs, including programs that we take to Springfield and East St. Louis and of course, in Aurora.
We should mention again that this is one of the top 10 high schools in the country.
In the country, we were ranked number two. IMSA was ranked number two by niche.com just this last year. We were ranked in the top 40 in the world by Wall Street Journal some years ago. Yeah. So it is a great the Illinois Math and Science Academy, Carl Sagan said, is a gift to humanity from the people of Illinois.
Hogwarts for Hackers is another term that I saw.
Hogwarts for Hackers was an article that was published in Wired and talked about some of our incredible alums and talked about especially this one day a week where students were allowed to pursue their interests, and had a couple of stories about students learning code on their own because we didn't teach it, but they had the time. And they also talked about high school students just goofing up and napping on that day.
It still blows my mind to think that we're teaching kids in lower grades now, third and fourth and fifth grade, coding. That's a big deal. Yeah.
Well, you know, people are saying that it's just another language, and it's going to be as important to science, to the new world of technology and science, as you know, just basic scientific literacy.
So let's talk a little bit more about the specifics of the Innovation Awards. How do people apply? What's the process for that? What are the dates again?
So the IMSA Tel Labs Next Generation Teen Innovator Awards is a program to identify entrepreneurial, innovative young minds entering 7th and 9th through 9th grade in the fall of 2017. Students who are already engaged in developing projects or startups that have an impact on the community. The application is already open and will be open through July 16. I like to say until 11:59 p.m. And then in September, we will have a luncheon to award to recognize those students. The winners will receive a membership to Steve and Janie Chen into the Center for Innovation and Inquiry, and they will get help in taking their prototype or their project to the next level, potentially to patent or to power pitches or to get some crowdfunding.
And that's open through July 16th.
Through July 16th, and they can apply through our website at imsa.edu, Illinois Math and Science Academy. .edu, so IMSA.edu.
So are you optimistic about the future with all the young kids?
You know what?
Up?
I am. If I just focus on the students who we have and we're reaching out to, I'm very optimistic. Our commencement is on June 3rd, and it'll be a great time for these students who are moving on to advance the human condition.
Well, all the best to you and to everyone at the Academy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. Dr. Jose Torres is the president of the Illinois Mathematics and Science Academy. We'll continue our conversation after the bell and post it with our podcast later this morning at WGNRadio.com. By the way, the Teen Innovation Awards applications are now open through July 16th. You can find more information at the website for the Illinois Mathematics and Science Academy in Aurora at imsa.edu.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 538. Glad to have you here on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Next week, June 7th, NASA will announce its new astronaut class. Nearly a record number of applications. Won't tell you how many. We'll let our next guest do that. But a record number of applications this year. And the new candidates will lead the space agency forward. Brandy Dean is a public affairs specialist at NASA. We're glad to have her on this morning. Good morning, Brandy.
Morning.
Are you at Mission Control? Because we usually hear that beep when we think of NASA.
Yeah, that's what you hear when we're talking to the crew in space. So yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not in space, but I'll do my best to fill you in anyway.
Well, we're glad to have you here. So tell us about the this. First of all, you had a record number of applications. People are dying to be astronauts, aren't they?
Right, yeah. More than 18,000 applications, which is more than twice the previous record. So we had a lot of good candidates to dig through, and I think we'll be able to come up with a really, really great class this time.
Well, how do you whittle that number down, and how many will you eventually select on June 7th?
We're not revealing how many yet, but it'll be between 8 and 14. Mm-hmm. As far as how we whittled it down, that was a long process. We actually took applications from December 2015 through February 2016. So it's been a while since we even stopped taking the applications.
Right.
After we got all those 18,000 in, they were actually all reviewed by people. The first cut was just to make sure that they met the minimum requirements, which was to have a bachelor's degree in a STEM field, and either a master's degree or 3 years of experience in the relevant field, as well as you have to be a U.S. citizen. If you're applying as a pilot, there's a certain number of hours in an airplane you need and things like that. But if you met those initial requirements, then you got reviewed by a board to pick out kind of the most qualified applicants, and that was actually mostly made up of astronauts themselves. So at that point, astronauts were reviewing all of those applications and kind of picking the best of the best. The ones who made that cut, they got their references checked, and that was probably several hundred still. They got their references checked, and then based on that, they narrowed it down to about 120 that were brought in for the initial interview with the astronaut selection board. And after those interviews, that was narrowed down to another level to about 50 who were brought back for a second interview, and then the final cut was made from that.
It's every once in a while I'll hear somebody who's not a space geek like me say, well, what does NASA do anymore? What are the astronauts needed for? But 18,000 applicants will really tell those people what is really happening. I mean, if you guys weren't doing anything, 18,000 people wouldn't sign up, would they?
Right, yeah. And actually, so there's a number of different things the astronauts we choose could do in the future with this class. Of course, we've got the International Space Station right now, which has astronauts on it 24/7 all year long. And we actually are even flying more astronauts to the space station at the moment, and hope to continue doing that in the future as we bring commercial companies online and start launching people from the United States again. That should be coming up in the next few years, and then we'll also have our Orion spacecraft coming online as well. It's already flown its first test flight, and another one's coming up, and soon we'll be putting people on it, which will allow us to send people beyond low Earth orbit to the moon and eventually Mars. So that's four different vehicles right there that astronauts could be flying on.
Right, and a lot of really cool missions. Is it possible that one of these candidates that you'll select this time around will be on one of those missions to Mars, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. We're planning to go to Mars in the 2030s, so by then they should be pretty far along in their career. Maybe they could be the commander of the mission.
Yeah, and then you mentioned the space station. I think people have sort of become used to the space station being up there, but it's going to be up there for a lot longer, isn't it?
Right. We're going to be up there well into the 2020s. And like I said, we're sending more astronauts even than we have been to the space station right now. So that means we get to do more research, which is which is key because we're finding out a lot about living in space on board the International Space Station and also doing research that benefits us here on Earth as well.
What is the training going to be like for the candidates that are selected once they hit the, get announced? Do they hit the ground running, and what will they be doing?
Once they're announced, they have a little time to kind of get their life in order and move to Houston, which is the first step. But they'll report for duty in August. And once they get here, they'll begin a kind of a two-year basic training regimen, learning about space station systems, learning to do spacewalks, use the robotic arm, things like that. And once they've completed that first 2 years of training, then they're considered full astronauts and they're eligible for to be assigned for a mission.
One of the great things about the Astronaut Corps, having interviewed a lot of these men and women, they come from different backgrounds and have different specialties. You don't want them all to be pilots or engineers, do you?
Right. And the current Astronaut Corps, you know, is a great example of that already. We've got astronauts who come from biology backgrounds and astronauts who are medical doctors, as well as astronauts who are coming from the military and are test pilots, and lots of engineers as well. So you want a good variety. And then you train all of those people to kind of be able to do the things you need them to do in space. So you know that you've got capable people on board whatever vehicle you're flying who can take care of a lot of different activities.
You know, people who often are the question askers about, well, what does NASA, what is the importance of being in space? What's the importance of exploration? Can you maybe give us a couple of sentences on that, why you do what you do? Because it, here in the opening bell, we talk a lot about business and technology and innovation. I would argue that the NASA is right there at the foundation of all of that.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess, I think, you know, the answer you get to that kind of depends on who you ask, because there's so many different reasons. But you know, just to name a few, obviously NASA does lead technology development. The things we need to be able to do what we do may not be what we need on Earth, but it leads to development of technologies that we use on Earth. And then also, I think, you know, how can you not explore the galaxy?
Right.
I don't know how we know that it's out there and then don't go take a look.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think that many people would argue that it's in our DNA to do that. And so it's kind of exciting to see that a future group of human beings is getting ready to do that.
Exactly, right. And I think, you know, all the astronauts will tell you that as well. They can't wait to go get in to the International Space Station to take a ride on Orion. They're all really excited about what we've got in store.
So, Brandy, let me ask you this final question. And it's, if young people are listening out there and they're thinking, wow, I might want to be an astronaut someday, what should they be doing now to prepare themselves for that application process in the future?
Well, the easy things are study hard, of course. If you ask an astronaut, they'll always tell you to choose, you know, as you're choosing, you know, what to major in, what you want to do for a career, choose something that you're really passionate about. Because, you know, 18,000 applications and we're choosing between 8 and 14, chances that you'll actually become selected as an astronaut are pretty slim. So you want to be in a field that you love regardless. But beyond that, if it's something that you love doing, you're more likely to really do good and stand out at it. So that increases your chances of being selected. But study hard, choose, you know, science, technology, math, engineering. All of those are great fields to go into. And then, you know, also you have to be pretty physically fit to be an astronaut. So you can't ignore that as well. And they say, you know, things like team sports, putting yourself into the kind of activities that would give you what we call operational experience, like backpacking or
scuba diving.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
That's all going to look good on your application. So, and also it's pretty fun.
All right. Brandy Dean, NASA Public Affairs Specialist for Mission Control in Houston. We appreciate you being on with us this morning. Brandy, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll tell you all about the new astronaut class when they're announced. June 7th is the date NASA makes the announcement down at Mission Control in Houston.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to our program. The Dow futures, NASDAQ, S&P futures, everything's pointing now toward just a modest open later this morning. NASDAQ futures up about 14 points, which is about a 0.25%. Also, the Dow futures up about 17 points now. Gold and silver are mixed. Crude oil is trading lower by about 2% now, $48.70 a barrel. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
The first trading day of the week yesterday saw soybean futures at the Board of Trade falling to their lowest level in nearly 14 months. Better than expected weather conditions over the long holiday weekend and worries about export demand for new crop supplies, corn and wheat futures declined about 2% on improving weather outlook. And after the CBOT closed, the USDA rated 65% of the corn crop in good to excellent condition. That's below an average of expectations for 68%. The USDA also rated 50% of the winter wheat crop and 62% of the spring wheat crop as good to excellent, both of those figures below analyst expectations. And after the market closed, Egypt's General Authority for Supply Commodities said it was seeking wheat from global suppliers for shipment from July 1 through 10. Turning to livestock trade on the first trading day of the week, live cattle reversed some of their recent losses, helped by short covering, and they said some investors sold June futures and simultaneously bought deferred months ahead of the first notice day for June cattle deliveries on Monday. So we saw live cattle yesterday ending the day with a gain of 22 cents a hundredweight in the June contract, August cattle up $2.90. As we approach June Dairy Month, we approach Harvard Milk Day's annual celebration and salute to the dairy industry coming up this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. Some other news that we're following for you this morning. The Federal Aviation Administration is seeking a $435,000 penalty against Chicago-based United Airlines, saying the carrier failed to inspect a repair job before putting a plane back into service. The FAA says that United Mechanics replaced a fuel pump pressure switch on a Boeing 787 in 2014, and the plane was used on 23 flights before the required inspection was performed. The FAA says United used the plane possibly on two flights after being told the inspection had been skipped. Airlines can appeal proposed penalties. Spokesman for United says the airline took action after identifying the issue and is working with the FAA to review the matter. Kellogg has confirmed plans to close distribution centers in Fort Worth and Houston and lay off nearly 500 workers permanently. The Battle Creek, Michigan-based breakfast and snack food company notified the Texas Workforce Commission of its plans in letters dated last Friday. The workers' last day on the job is scheduled between July 29th and August 11th for distribution center employees, a little bit later on for snack employees. The layoffs will affect 200 workers at the Fort Worth Distribution Center and more than 250 at the Houston Distribution Center. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, May 31st, in economic news today, the National Association of Realtors will release its pending home sales index for April. Last month, the association said that its pending home sales index had slipped 0.8% to 111.4 in March from 112.3 in February. Also today, the Federal Reserve releases its Beige Book, a survey of economic conditions across the country. Other things going on today, a new national survey finds that young men are significantly less likely to talk than women to talk about health with relatives, especially sexual health. The survey is coming out today, reports that 4 out of 5 men have never discussed sexual health with a family member. Scripps National Spelling Bee begins today. The final will be tomorrow. 5-year-old Edith Fuller of Oklahoma is the youngest contestant to participate in the National Bee, which will start mid-morning today. Also, a Dublin court will hear a legal challenge paid for by crowdfunding if Britain's departure from the European Union can be reversed once it has been triggered. Lawyers for the British government have said that once started, the process is irrevocable, but some EU leaders say Britain can change its mind. A court in Ireland may consider that today. Also, here in Chicago, the first Nutella Cafe will open, a Nutella-themed menu serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It'll be located at 189 North Michigan Avenue. Again, grand opening is today. It's just right near Millennium Park. The cafe will be open daily along one of the busiest tourist attraction streets in the city. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, May 31st.